Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, I'm delighted now to be joined by one of our greatest sports people, Rachel Blackmore. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Rachel, you've won the Gold Cup, the Grand National, champion jockey at the Cheltenham Festival, loads of other accolades, but you've managed to find something new, just as challenging, if not more challenging. You've written a children's book, Granny National. So we'll talk about that today, but we're also going to talk about your life in five songs. So the book, I think it's kind of roughly based around your own childhood growing up on a farm. Growing up on the farm sounds fairly idyllic as you portray it in the book, was it?
It was a fantastic childhood. Now, there's plenty of things in the book that didn't happen in real life, but it's kind of, I suppose, based a bit on the memories I had growing up. You know, I grew up in an era where there was no mobile phones. You know, we were outside a lot. I grew up surrounded by animals and just had a fantastic childhood on the farm, and there's plenty of those memories in the book, I suppose.
And how old were you when you got on a pony first?
I'd say I must have been, there's photos there of when I was 2 or 3. My older brother, Johnny, had a pony before me, so I was so lucky, like I never had to ask for a pony. There was just one there. So had a fantastic childhood in that sense. We were wheeled around the country riding when we were younger, and we had a great time.
Now, the pony that the girl has in the book is a bit of a gore, yeah?
That's 100%. Factual.
Is it?
That's Bubbles. She was my kind of first pony, we'll say, I had off lead rein and stuff, and she was really forward going and she loved going too fast, I suppose. But I think that maybe gave me a sense of what that was like, and you know, I didn't not like it. So maybe she kind of instilled a career I was going to have without me even knowing it.
Yeah. And when did you decide you wanted to be a jockey then? How old?
Yeah, I suppose I always knew, like I had an interest in racing kind of growing up. You know, I would have, the Grand National was the first race I would have watched as a kid growing up. And, you know, I always knew I wanted to be a jockey and do it as an amateur and whatnot. But I never thought I'd be able to actually make a career out of it. So, it's kind of mad how everything has happened.
Yeah. So when you're into horses like that, is your childhood then all about horses? Like, in every weekend you're off somewhere and events and all that kind of thing. Is that your whole life kind of thing?
Yeah, it is. But like, I also played a lot of sport in school, and I used to go dancing on a Thursday, and you know, did lots of other things as well. But yeah, I think ponies growing up was the biggest thing in my childhood. Yeah.
Okay, so your first music choice today is The Beatles, 8 days a week. What memories does this evoke for you?
Yeah, so as a child, we used to go camping in France, myself, my parents, my brother and sister, and my dad didn't want to get the long boat, so we used to have to drive across England to get to France, and there'd be lots of CDs and music played, I suppose, along the way. And this is just one of those memories of listening to The Beatles. It was that album, it was red with the yellow number one on it. I just remember that. And we used to listen to The Beatles, Queen, you know, The Corrs, Coldplay, Garth Brooks. There was loads of different things played. But yeah, this was just one of the songs we used to listen to. And what I suppose is kind of special looking back now is after I won the Grand National, Ringo Starr put up a tweet, Twitter, X, whatever, congratulating me. And that was just massive.
Wow. Starr knows who you are.
Just absolutely incredible. Yeah. Okay. So that kind of tied it all. It was just mad to look back on it all then.
Magic, yeah. And that old back of the car music from your parents does stay with us all our lives, doesn't it? So here's Rachel Blackmore's first choice, The Beatles, 8 days a week.
Love you every day, girl, always on my mind. One thing I can say, girl, love you all the time.
Okay, that's The Beatles, 8 days a week, and that's Rachel Blackmore's first music choice today. And by the way, in case anyone thought they were going over camping in France to glamping or staying in a yurt or anything, it was the real thing, hardcore,
a proper tent, yeah, we'd all the little camping stove, fold-up chairs, sleeping bags, the lot, yeah.
You think living on a farm, like, you might decide to go for a bit of comfort on the holiday.
I question my parents' decisions all the time as well.
So, Camir, do you have to be a pretty determined kid then to decide you want to be a jockey and to follow through on that?
Yeah, I think if you want to do anything in life, you know, you need to be determined. But it just kind of, being a jockey was something I always wanted to do, but I just never envisaged that it would be a career and it would develop into what it has. But I suppose when you love doing something, you know, it doesn't feel like you need to arouse determination from anywhere. You know, yeah. You're kind of, it's just part of who you are.
You're a pretty competitive person too, aren't you? Were you always like that as a kid as well, yeah?
Yeah, I think I was. Like, I would have been the kid if we were playing a match in school. Like, I would have been trying to make sure that somebody was keeping score, you know what I mean? That yeah. kind of thing. But yeah, I think all sports people are competitive. They kind of have to be, you know?
Yeah. And was it harder, say, then would it have been seen as being harder for a girl to break into being a jockey at that point?
No, I think when I came to the weigh room, 19 or 20, you know, Nina Carberry and Katie Walsh were there and they were achieving phenomenal things. You know, they'd ridden Cheltenham winners, Irish national winners. So any stigma that was half lingering was definitely expelled by their achievements. So, you know, I definitely walked into an industry in a weigh room that treated everyone, you know, if you were good enough and you worked hard, you get your opportunities.
Okay. Do your parents have to be very supportive as well if you have that dream of being a jockey? Were they? Yeah.
Oh, they were brilliant. Like, it was the grounding I got probably as a kid, you know, being brought to different things with my ponies and with my horses then when I was a teenager, you know, that all stands to you then when you go down the racing road. But I think, you know, once you head down that road, you kind of have to do it yourself.
Yeah. And do some people have a connection with horses, like, and can feel them and vibe off them, and some people don't? Is that how it is, like? Do you
yeah,
have that?
I think they're extremely intelligent animals. You know, they're phenomenal, and yeah, I think you'll connect with some more than others. They're very like people. You know what I mean? Like, some people you'll kind of click with more than others, and
yeah.
Some people are more friendly than others. You know, they're very much like people. They're incredible animals.
All different personalities.
Yeah, yeah? Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to know how to get around a kind of a more warier one, like, or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, your second music choice is the Cranberries and Linger. Why this?
Yeah, so this just reminds me of the first time I rode at the Cheltenham Festival. I was down at the start and I was riding a horse called Linger, and Davy Russell was in the race as well, and we were just down at the start circling before the tape goes up, and he just started belting out this song. So it just always reminds me of that moment, I think.
Okay, here's Rachel Blackmore's second choice, the Cranberries and Linger. That's Rachel Blackmore's second choice. So that brings you back to your first ever Cheltenham Festival. Were you nervous?
Yeah, you would be. But I think when I got down to the start and heard Davy singing that, it definitely relaxed me a bit. And yeah, he was an extremely successful manner in Cheltenham. So
he's obviously pretty relaxed before a race. Like, what's the mental game with being a jockey? Like, are you fairly relaxed around it?
Yeah, you need to be relaxed. You know, you're not trying to pump yourself up. That's the last thing you want to do, because a horse will feel everything off you, you know, and if you're too pumped up and hyped up getting up with them, they'll kind of feel that. So you need to be as relaxed as you can to help them relax, and, you know, it gives a better result.
So it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Like, because you think of most athletes, like, and they're there on their own doing their own thing. That's mm-hmm. their performance. So you have to actually kind of get a synergy going with the horse,
yeah, look,
in a way, like,
some,
yeah?
You know, different things work for different people. You know what I mean? I think for me anyway, getting too hyped up and pumped up before a race wouldn't work. But, you know, it probably might work for other jockeys, you know. But I think everyone kind of knows themselves what works for them.
And are you thinking much at all?
Sometimes people would think jockeys aren't thinking with the decisions they make in a race. But you're trying to be thinking. You're trying to make the right decisions. So you don't always. That doesn't always happen. But you're trying your best to be thinking. Yeah.
But I presume a certain amount of it is instinct as well. It's really fast thinking.
Yeah, a lot of it's instinct. You can have, you know, all your different things in your head going out. You know, the plan, what you want to do. You get down to the start and, you know, you think Brendan O'Connor's going to make the running on his horse and then he doesn't. And the whole dynamic of the race is changing. Things change throughout a race. you know, your horse mightn't be travelling as well as you thought, and so you have to give them a chance, or they might run very keen, so you have to, you know, get them a bit of cover. You know, lots of things change in a race, so you have to be able to kind of adapt to that.
Yeah, I suppose the ultimate race where anything can happen is the Grand National. There's a great set piece in the book where you describe in detail a Grand National the family is watching, with a kind of a legendary field, it has to be said. I'd say you enjoyed writing that bit, did you?
I didn't.
No?
It was really, really hard. So in that chapter of the book, they're sitting down watching the Grand National on the TV. It was a hard thing to try and get on paper, you know, how people are going to enjoy watching it, are reading the book. But I found that a hard chapter to write because I was trying not to make it too drawn out for people who don't know what the Grand National is. I'm glad you're smiling.
You struck it well. Like, yeah, it was good. And sure, look, every family has done that as well. Like people who never watch a race at all.
Yeah. That was probably my first memory of racing, of the Grand National, was sitting down like they are in that chapter of the book with friends, have the newspaper cuttings, you have your five horses or whatever, and you're watching them throughout the race. So that's what kind of instilled in me how, you know, you wanted to kind of give it a go.
And what is it that's so special about the Grand National?
It's just such an iconic race. It's got so much history. It's a race like no other. The jumps are different. It's over 4 miles long. It's just a very special race. And I think it's a race that captivates an audience from all over the world. You know, like you get congratulations from, you know, someone in Japan sent me a congratulations. You know, it's just a different race. It's just very captivating.
And Camille, whatever about having a plan in most races, like it's presumably much more difficult to have a plan in a Grand National as
well. Yeah, there's, you know, you have little things that you'd like to happen. You know, you'd like to have a little bit of space. You'd like to have no horse in front, you jumping the first. You know, there's lots of things. You know the horses you'd like to be following and the ones you wouldn't like to be following. So there's things you'd like to happen. But yeah, the Grand National is, you know, there's so many different variables. So many things can happen. And I think there's a different vibe in the weigh room before the Grand National. You know, lads are...
Is there, yeah?
Yeah, like people are just more, a little bit more relaxed. There's one or two, there's a bit of crack going on. You know, there's people are wishing each other good luck. And there's a great atmosphere, like versus, you know, Cheltenham Gold Cup or Champion Hurdle. You know, it's serious. It's pressure. Like people feel a lot of pressure. I've been so lucky that I can say I've won, you know, big races in Cheltenham and a Grand National, and the feeling is so different. You know, when you cross the line, winning on Honeysuckle, we'll say, in a Champion Hurdle, you know, that's pressure. You cross the line, you're hit with relief.
Okay.
That's the first feeling you have, is just relief that this is after working out. But in the Grand National, you cross the line and you don't get hit with any relief because you never felt any pressure. So you're just hit with elation and joy straight away. That moment is just, I hope I never forget it.
Amazing. You don't really like when people make a big deal out of you being the first woman to win it, do you?
No, I think when I crossed the line, it wasn't something that hit me, but that's because of all the incredible work of all the women that went before me to put me in a position that when I won the race, that didn't come into my head. You know, it's a privilege and it's very special to be the first woman to do anything. So I completely appreciate that as well.
Camille, it's interesting what you say about in an ordinary race, that relief is the thing when you win. Because... like
followed by then joy.
Yeah, but the and then like you could have another race in
half an hour.
So it's kind of, it's different to other sports, isn't it? Like, but I'm thinking about if you don't do well in a race, or you feel you made mistakes or anything, do you also have to just like leave it behind, move on, next
you get,
job? Yeah,
you get plenty of practice. Well, I've gone plenty of practice at that. It's easier said than done, you know, especially on the bigger days. But you know, you have to be able to just leave whatever happened behind you and move on to the next one, because you don't want it to affect you in your next race. You know, that's a big part of being a jockey as well, is being able to park what happened and look forward. And, you know, you can look back on everything in the coming days or whatever, but in that moment, you need to be able to just on to the next one.
Because if your confidence gets a knock, it's kind of in your body as well as head, isn't it?
So you have to. And like, you know, there'll be little decisions, like everything happens in a race so quickly and there's split second decisions. And if you're in a good mental headspace, I suppose you'll be better at making those.
Yeah. Your partner, Brian Hayes, is also a jockey. So does that make life easier for both of you, that you understand each other's life and presumably you can talk shop at home and stuff like that?
Yeah, we, you know, we get the same holidays, I suppose. Yeah. That makes the booking yeah, the summer holiday good. Easier. Yeah, like we don't talk about racing half as much as people would think, you know.
Really?
No, we don't. You know, we both understand what it's like to be a jockey and... Yeah, I suppose I don't really know any different, so...
Yeah. I think your next music choice brings us back to your college days at UCD. So did you get the full college experience or did you were amateur still at that stage,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
But were you sacrificing a lot of the normal kind of going out and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I got the full college experience in UCD without getting the piece of paper at the end. So
okay.
I went to UCD and I used to ride out for Arthur Moore close to Dublin, so just outside Naas. So I used to ride out for Arthur once or twice a week when I could. I was getting to whatever lectures I could, but I was also enjoying the college experience and I got to do that for my first year in Dublin, and I didn't drink, so I was still able to go out, you know, stay out. I wonder now, like, I had so much energy back then, but yeah, I would still be able to go out, enjoy it, get up the next day and ride out if I wanted and stuff. So yeah, I was trying to juggle probably a few things. Yeah,
I'd say you needed to be kind of slightly more mature than the others, did you, a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose I finished college when I was 25. There was lots of switching of courses. I did science in UCD, but I just kept failing maths. So I went down to Limerick to do equine science. You know, I was writing out a lot more when I was in college in Limerick and scraping through exams, but getting them done anyway. But I was always holding on to that little hope that writing would kind of happen for me, and it just wasn't.
Okay. So the song you've chosen from that time is Matoma featuring the Notorious B.I.G. and Ja Rule, Old Thing Back. What does this remind you of?
I think it's just a song that now even I have it on every playlist. You know, if we're doing a playlist for something, I'll always stick it on.
Okay, Rachel Blackmore's third choice. That's Matoma featuring the Notorious B.I.G. and Ja Rule. That's Old Thing Back, and that's Rachel Blackmore's third choice today. Rachel, like all jockeys, you've had your fair share of falls and injuries. I think you were out with a neck injury for a bit last year. Do you think about the danger much?
No, I think if you thought about the danger of what could happen, you know, it wouldn't be the thing for you to be doing. Three ambulances follow us around every day. We're very aware what can go wrong. But if you started thinking about that, it wouldn't be the thing for you to do anymore.
And like when there is a fall or you become aware that something's happening, I presume sometimes it just happens or whatever. Do you have time to think about keeping yourself safe, getting out of the way, all that kind of stuff? Like, does something kick in?
This is when you fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... You know, you're trying to make yourself as small as you can anyway, you know, curl yourself up into a ball, because, you know, it's an impact of another horse coming on behind that can often be the problem. But like, back to horses being amazing again, they will do everything in their power to avoid you. You know, I've been on horses and, you know, we've landed, there's been a jockey on the ground in front of us. They will sidestep them, like, for themselves as much as anything. They don't want to hit this object on the ground. So horses will try their best to avoid you. But sometimes, you know, things happen. Yeah,
and that's just part of the gig.
It is. Yeah. It's part of what we do. You know, jockeys get falls, and it's a very unfortunate part. But that's part of what we do. And you know, Jennifer Pugh is our chief medical officer, doctor, and you know, she's fantastic, and she's got a brilliant team around her, and we're very, very well looked after as jockeys.
What do you do to relax away from racing?
Go on holidays, Dublin Airport, take me somewhere.
Yeah,
I think so. It's you definitely can relax when you're out of Ireland, I think. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Do you have to watch lifestyle all the time, like, or can you kick back and kind of relax when
I'm very lucky. My weight is good. So I'm, you know, a jump jockey primarily. So, you know, there's plenty of people that have to sweat and watch what they eat and so on. But yeah, I'm not one of those, thankfully.
So your next music choice is Fred again and Swedish House Mafia, Turn on the Lights Again. Why this one?
I suppose electric picnic, going to concerts, that's just something maybe I like to do in my yeah. spare time as well. You know, I remember going to Oxygen back when Oxygen was on, you know, some great memories of that, and saw Fred again in Electric Picnic. It was a fantastic show. It was really, really good. And I suppose you get to go to these things with your friends and you're just having fun, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, here's Rachel Blackmore's fourth choice, Fred Again, Swedish House Mafia, Turn On The Lights Again. Again, that's Rachel Blackmore's fourth choice today. So you didn't enjoy writing the Grand National scene in the book. How did you enjoy writing Granny National, the book in general?
To be honest, I found the whole thing of writing the book, it was a challenge. Like, it wasn't easy. I think underestimated the process. It takes a lot longer than I ever thought. I was very lucky. Like, I had fantastic support, you know, with Rachel Pierce, who I wrote it alongside. She was brilliant.
Do you have dyslexia as well?
Yeah, I do. So I really love that it's done now. And I feel like great sense of satisfaction that it's very cool to see a book on a shelf with your name on it. Yeah. And I enjoyed it but didn't enjoy it, if that makes sense, you know.
Yeah, totally. Well, you've enjoyed that. There's a lot of things like that. Once they're done, we think,
yeah,
I enjoyed that. I'm glad
I
did
exactly.
that.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's a great book, and what it's got, which the best kids' books have, there are little hints of kind of darkness around it. Like, there's a little small kind of subplot that Granny is starting to forget things. And it's not laboured or anything, but it's really poignant then, because that's kind of the kids get her to run this race, like, and, you know, before it's too late, I guess. Something she kind of never thought she'd do.
Yeah, you've definitely picked up on things that I was trying to get into the book. You know, even the granddad character as well, you know, he's
not a nice, twinkly granddad.
But in the end of the day, not to give away the whole book, but he does kind of help them, you know. So as a kid, I used to listen to a lot of audiobooks. That's how I kind of enjoyed books as a kid. My sister was a massive bookworm, but yeah, audiobooks were what I listened to. So, you know, it was the tapes, the Harry Potter tapes I used to listen to.
Yeah.
Got a bit of inspiration from Severus Snape for the granddad character.
Yeah. Okay, your final song choice today is Tez Katie and Sevi, is it called?
Yeah, to be honest, I just like the sound of this song. I think I like sounds of songs more so than kind of lyrics.
Yeah, kind of nice and kind of
Yeah, chill, it's summery, you know, kind of. It's yeah, summery yeah. and yeah.
Granny National is published by Sandy Cove in association with Puffin Books. It's out now. Rachel, you'll be doing a public signing on the 24th of May at 11 a.m. in TRI Equestrian at the Curragh, is that right?
Yeah, I heard that was possible, but it's obviously
Listen,
definitely going to happen now.
Have to go ahead now, yeah. By the way, are your granny still alive?
My granny Moore is still alive, so she got a copy the other day, so I'll be awaiting with anticipation
listen,
for her review.
That would be nice. Yeah, I bet you will. Okay, Rachel Blackmore, thank you so much. We'll play out now on your final song choice. This is Tez Katie and Sevi.
Brendan@rte.ie.